Chapter 21. He identified me. Ezekiel 3, verse 15. I came to them of the captivity at Tel Abib, that dwelt by the river of Chebar, and I sat there where they sat, and remained there astonished among them 7 days. Hebrews 5, verses 1 and 2. For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins, who can have compassion on the ignorant and on them that are out of the way, for that he himself also is compassed with infirmity. Ezekiel went and dwelt with the captive Jews of Tel Abib, which means hill of corn. He was sent to minister to a people so shamed, defeated, and miserable in the grief of their captivity that he sat stunned in astonishment for 7 days. Ezekiel was not sent to minister to the nobles or the high people of society, but to the depressed and despised captives living at the ghetto called Tel Abib, a word of reproach, meaning eaters of corn. It is important for a man of God that he is able to identify with the people to whom he is sent to minister, even if they are unfortunate, forlorn slaves held in the hopeless captivity of moral defeat and ruled by the iron hand of the prince of darkness. Jesus, the Son of God, was sent by his Father to minister to the captive. He was especially anointed to open their prison doors that their captivity might be ended. It is written of him in Isaiah 61 and verse 1, that the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord hath anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. He hath sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. Unless the man of God can feel and identify with those in captivity, and partake of their miseries himself, he will never be able to bring real help to them in their helplessness, or be able to give the comfort and hope he himself had found in God. Paul writes to the Corinthian church, and I quote, in 2 Corinthians 1:6, whether be afflicted, it is for your consolation and salvation, which is effectual in the enduring of the same sufferings which we also suffer. Or whether we be comforted, it is for your consolation and salvation. After the priest Ezekiel had experienced being lifted up, empowered, taught, delivered, and commissioned, he was sent back to live with those despised Jews in captivity. It was to those people he was going to minister the hope, faith, and revelation of God, and for him to do so, he had to be identified with them and their lot. A well-known minister shared an experience he had with a Christian psychiatrist. He was getting very tense and pressured in his ministry and felt he needed some help. To his surprise, the psychiatrist told him just to write down on a piece of paper as many answers as he could to the one question, "Who am I?" For several sessions, all he did was keep trying to find answers to that one question. "Write down everything you can think of," said the doctor. That is a hard question to answer, and psychiatrists often ask that question. After about a month of this, the doctor said to him, "Reverend, I think I have that answer to your problem. You have told me everything you can think of, that you are a pastor and a father and a husband. You have written your name, that you are a child of your father and a mother, a child of God, a born-again Christian. You have told me many such things, but in all your answer, there is one thing you have omitted, and not even once have you even mentioned it." "Well, what in the earth could that be?" mused the minister. "Just this," replied the doctor. You have never said or even intimated that you are just a man, a human being. You have thought of yourself as a son of God, as if you were a superman. And by the power of your faith, you could live a superhuman life, as if you were above human needs and limitations. You tried to act in your ministry as if somehow you didn't have to have all the problems that people had. Come on, be a man. Don't be afraid or ashamed of just being a man. Do not be ashamed of being tired, at times sick, or not subject to the laws of healthy living. That doctor gave the key to a much better and freer life to that man of God. An eater of corn. That's all we are. That is what God made us. We are not supposed to be anything else. God did not intend for us to be little angels, eaters of manna, even though we do try to act like that sometimes. Neither did the Creator make us devils, even though we act like that sometimes also. Therefore, the Creator, who after the fall made us as we are, a mixture of animal and divine natures that we call human, does not expect us to be supermen or angelic. He wants us to be what we are, very little, very vulnerable, and very loved sons of Adam. Ezekiel obeyed and later wrote, I came to them in captivity, and that's where I dwelt. Yes, I came and lived with my own people. The Lord told him, I am not sending you to a people with a strange language, but to your own people. Just be one with them. Live it out with them. Hudson Taylor went to China. He put on Chinese garb. He grew his hair in a queue like the Chinese. He ate Chinese food and lived with the Chinese. He was very heavily criticized by the other missionaries. However, the greatest Christian work in China was done by Hudson Taylor and his workers, and not by his critics, who refused to sit where they sat. Ezekiel lived in the ghetto with them in their captivity and became what they were, a despised foreign Jew, a captive. Sometimes, missionaries carry an attitude as if they are a super race. I am an American, or we are English, or Swedish, or Russian. We are not like those poor little stupid people to whom we are ministering. We are definitely a cut above them. Such an attitude hinders and impedes any or all help or ministry they could otherwise give. In order to minister to those in captivity, one must go into their captivity and dwell there. God sent Ezekiel to where there was a hill of corn, Tel Abib. Obviously, then, there was at least corn to eat, so it was not going to starve. Likewise, the river flowed by that hill, and he would live by the river Chebar. Although he was to dwell with them in captivity, he could still have the hill of corn and the river of abundant life. How many of God's children in jails and concentration camps and pain chambers have found that there was the river of God flowing right beside them? Ezekiel was in captivity, but he was by the river in Tel Aviv. He was to join the captives, but not to leave his place by the river. Then, even in Tel Aviv, he would be fed and cared for, and his soul would be like a well-watered garden. When the Lord of harvest, the lover of souls, took him down deeper into the misery of captivity, he let him know that the river would follow him all the way to Tel Aviv. Ezekiel was not going to be cut off from the living waters and live in drought. He would have the river there beside him and beside the hill of corn. I sat where they sat. A man of God must come through the same dealings and experiences that people have. He will have times of testing in his body, in his economy, in his spirit and mind. He will have to wrestle through those attacks and find his victories. If not, he will never be able to bring to the people a living word of consolation, comfort, and hope. Only as Ezekiel lived and identified with him and learned to drink of that river and eat of that corn, could he in turn show to his people how to obtain comfort from those waters and sustenance from that hill of corn. The laying on of hands is a way to identify with another. In the book of Leviticus, chapter 1 and verse 4, we read of the priest, "He shall put his hand upon the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be accepted for him to make atonement for him." In this act, he would be personally identified with a sacrificial lamb slain for his sin. Therefore, after that, he could act as a priest, join his faith with others, and be identified with them in prayer for their sins. Because he sat where they sat, he would know what it meant to be hurt, lost, desperate, blind, and hellbound. Therefore, his priestly prophetic prayers would come from a compassionate heart that felt the poignancy of the need and could pray with true intensity of his fellow's prayer. Rhys Howells tells in his book, The Intercessor, written by Norman Grubb, how God would identify him with certain peoples or needs in times of interceding for them. One time, God ordered him to pray for the orphans in India. And in order that he could identify with them and feel what they felt, God told him that he must eat just one bowl of porridge a day. For a good many weeks, that was his daily allowance. Nevertheless, he had to keep on his full work schedule in the coal mines. It was required of him to continue fulfilling that order until he prayed through for divine sustenance and had full strength for that hard work with only one bowl of porridge a day. When that was fulfilled, the Lord released him. However, from that time on, he could pray with a true heart feeling for those hungry orphan children in India. I sat where they sat. A man of God cannot be a cold dispenser of grace like a slot machine. Come, put in your tithes, pull the lever, and you will receive all the benefits of the promises. The trouble is, the slot machine has no identification with its customer. It is cold, lifeless, uncaring, and at times mercilessly swallows the coin and gives nothing in return. At a certain large conference in Denver, Colorado, there was a man ministering healing. The minister had the people line up in three lines, the $25 line, the $10 line, and the $5 line. He told the people, the real prayer of faith was for the $25 line. The middle prayer of faith was for the $10 line. And the weak, worn-out faith was for the $5 line. Such actions definitely are not the result of one who has sat where they sat, but rather one who coldly dispenses divine grace as if it were sold in a slot machine. God definitely does not send forth his commissioned ministers to that kind of ministry. The man of God must be able to say, I sat where they sat. I hurt where they hurt. I have fought what they have fought. I've wrestled with the same flesh that they wrestle with. And I have had the same harassments and frustrations that all the rest of mankind have. That is God's way of joining us, not only in the hurting side, but also in the faith side, and thereby adjoining in heart and heartfelt prayers, and have the joy of being the hands or heart or voice to which the divine word of help or deliverance can flow to them. In a certain restaurant, the waiters and waitresses came in, stood around the table, and sang, Happy Birthday to you. To tell the truth, it makes one feel like a sudden snowstorm has come whistling around the table, stealing away all the warmth of a lovely family reunion. Or, like a Western Union messenger boy that comes and knocks on the door and says, I have a telegram from you from your spouse. and start singing, "Happy birthday to you." True, that lad is a faithful bringer of true tidings, but he is not identified with either the sender or the receiver, and leaves one standing at the door, cold and unresponsive. One may prophesy, "Friend, the Lord loves thee. Yea, I say unto you, he will bless you. He intends to do many good things for you," etc. But there lacks the identification with reality that would make his words life and real. Such a messenger is not sitting where they sit. Such a one is one that disinterestedly brings a message that means little to him and therefore will mean little to the recipient. Such a cold, disinterested word has a hard passage getting from their lips to the heart. Heart speaks to heart, and head speaks to head. Paul had been blessed, lifted up, and taken into the glory of the heavenlies. But he said, "I am a prisoner of Christ for your sakes." The more trials and troubles in his captivity that God takes his men through, the more ways that man can identify with God's captive children, the more faith he will have for them, and a wideness in ministry because he has sat where they sit. A man of God must not only sympathize, but empathize, and have compassion. Having been prepared by God, he will really know what another is going through. Jesus had compassion on the poor and needy, even before he suffered the cross. Just by living in our decadent, corrupt world, straight out of the heavenly perfume of the ivory palaces, he entered into a stable filled with asses and camels. He understood the deep problems of life from the very day of his nativity. Jesus sat where we sit. How does God build compassion and an understanding heart in his servants? One way is to cause them to sit where they sit in their captivity, to be able to understand it and wrestle with the different problems of the various phases of their life. If one has never been given victory in a certain area of conflict, he may be able to talk to someone and give the nice cliches that Jesus said, but it will not generate faith in the hearer. Only if he can say, "I know, I understand, I have been there." And somehow, that hurting one will sense that it is true. He doesn't have to tell all the details. The hearer just knows that this man does understand, and they will be able to believe that word of faith. He identified me. How important that is for a ministry to be identified, to understand, to suffer with them. God will keep that memory alive so that compassion can ever flow. Otherwise, that spirit of love and grace cannot flow through the human channel. It is obstructed and held back for lack of understanding. After Ezekiel came through all the training, blessing, and anointing, and was lifted up in the Spirit with the power of God upon him, what next? Where do I go now with all this training? Ezekiel, now go down into captivity. Sit where they sit. Eat where they eat. Dwell with them so that you can minister a true grace, a true mercy, a true love.